Part 2 of Paranoia by Francesca, read by Dodificus. They walked up to 307 in silence, but Jim was tense, nervously anticipating conversation. He wondered what the hell he was going to say when Blair finally screwed him to the wall and demanded an account of his behaviour. He couldn't tell him the truth. There was no proof of anything, and his explanation sounded paranoid and patronising in the extreme. But surprisingly, Blair didn't initiate a conversation. Blair merely shoved him toward the sofa and bustled around the loft, returning eventually with a hot compress and a cold beer. He pushed Jim gently backward so that his head was tilted against the sofa back, then laid the warm washcloth over his eyes and put the beer in his hand. Jim sighed as the heat penetrated his skull and blindly lifted up the beer for a swig. It was cold and tasted great, and he sighed happily. "This," he confessed, "is pretty fucking good, Chief." "We aims to please," Sandberg said from behind him. He felt Blair's strong hands touch his shoulders and begin to knead the knotted muscles there. He groaned and shifted slightly to give Blair better access. After a few minutes of this, he had relaxed substantially, and his headache was again beaten back into submission. He raised a hand and pulled the now cool washcloth from his face, leaned his head back and looked up at his partner, who was still standing behind him. He knew he was asking for trouble, but he couldn't help himself. "So, where's the third degree?" Blair blinked at him and took his hands off Jim's shoulders. "What do you mean?" "Where are the 10,000 questions?" Jim asked. Blair shrugged and went into the kitchen to get himself a beer. "I don't think I have any, really." "Oh, yeah? Now that was frightening. Sandberg without questions. That meant Sandberg with a conclusion." "Yeah," Blair confirmed. He regarded Jim thoughtfully and leaned against the countertop, swigging his beer. Jim knew he should count his blessings, let it go, but he just couldn't. "So what are you thinking?" he asked suspiciously. Blair took a deep breath and nodded to himself. "I'm thinking that this isn't primarily a sense thing," he answered, setting his beer bottle down on the counter with a soft thud. Damn it, Sandberg was onto him. Which he should have figured. You should never con a con artist. You should never lie to a champion obfuscator. And don't fuck with the god. "Oh yeah?" "Yeah." Blair chewed his lower lip thoughtfully, keeping his eyes on Jim. "I'm thinking that this is something else." Jim swallowed. "What do you mean?" Blair shrugged. "I don't know," he said, crossing back to stand behind Jim again. "Something else." Blair put his hands back on Jim's shoulders and began massaging again. Jim sighed and helplessly relaxed back into his guide's hands. "What kind of something else?" he asked. "Well, you've been sort of possessive lately. Touchy-feely," Blair added thoughtfully, one hand straying up to the base of Jim's skull and rubbing gently. "Shit, that felt good." And then Blair bent down and rested his cheek against the top of Jim's head. "What do you think?" he murmured. "Oh, brother," Jim thought desperately. "How the fuck do I play this?" He had wanted Sandberg close. Well, he'd gotten his wish, hadn't he? Care for what you wish for. "Look, I don't know," Jim replied finally. "I only know that right now I feel better when you're around, okay?" And that much at least was true. "Okay," Blair answered softly. I don't know about something else. I don't know what that means, Jim explained with quiet desperation. Okay, Blair said again. Okay. No pressure. No rush. No problem. He straightened up. We'll play it your way. Play it my way? Play what my way? And what is my way anyway? Do you want to come take a nap? Sandberg asked suddenly. He nodded, because a nap sounded damned good. And then he blinked. Come take a nap? Come take a nap? He turned to stare at his partner. Come take a nap? Yeah, Blair said. Come take a nap with me, he added, clearing the matter up. In my room. Do you want to? No. No. Okay. Yes. No. Yes. Jim groaned and covered his face with his hands. Oh, God. I am in so much fucking trouble here. I mean, you don't have to, Blair explained quickly. It's just that I'm feeling kind of tired, and so I'm going to. And you can come if you want. He paused, and his blue eyes narrowed suddenly. If you think it'll make you feel better, he added carefully, speculatively. Little bastard, Jim thought with gruff affection. Smart little bastard. He laughed once, quickly. This thing of trying to play chess with Sandberg, this was a sucker's game. The little bastard had all the moves. He crossed his arms and considered the opening Blair had just given him. Take a nap. Well, he could do that. He wanted to do that, actually. He wondered if Sandberg would be taken off guard if he said yes. Or was he just walking into a trap? Could he get back from here? He could if he was careful. Could he maybe even use this to his advantage? If he kept Sandberg's brain engaged on these lines, he might be able to get some answers. Solve the problem. And then he could back off, re-establish his boundaries, and they lived happily ever after. The end. Simple. Okay, Jim said, watching Blair's face closely. He was pleased to see that his partner was a little taken aback after all. But he recovered fast. Okay then, Blair said, nodding, and then he turned around and headed into his room. Jim got to his feet and followed him. He watched as Sandberg kicked off his sneakers and scrambled onto the bed. Jim slipped his own loafers off and lay down beside him. They lay there, side by side, eyes closed, breathing quietly in the dim afternoon light. It took Sandberg all of 7 minutes to close the distance between them. Jim smiled to himself, feeling Blair's body warm and solid against his. He took a deep breath, rolled towards his partner, and gathered him into his arms, pulling Blair's back hard against his chest. Say what you would, Jim mused idly. It felt good to hold the guy. Maybe it was a sentinel thing, or just a creature comfort thing, but it felt good to cuddle Sandberg like this. It was like some huge protector alarm had finally been switched off. It was like some part of him that was always cold was finally warming up. He tucked his face into the back of Blair's head, into the mop of soft hair, and waited until his guide was relaxed and heavy in his arms. Blair, he whispered softly. Can I ask you something? He felt Blair tense. Sure. He couldn't help but smile. Do you think that a sentinel has a genetic imperative to protect his guide? He asked quietly. He could feel confusion grip the body in his arms. Whatever Blair had been expecting, that wasn't it. Ha, he thought, score one for me. Huh? Do you think that a sentinel has a genetic imperative to protect his guide? Blair swiveled in his arms, turning so that they were now face to face, bodies pressed together. I don't know, he answered, frowning. I guess. Jim raised his arm and curled it around Blair's head, pulling Blair's cheek against his chest. He closed his eyes, knowing that Sandberg was still thinking. I mean, the guide is a member of the tribe, right? Blair mused. Yeah, but I mean beyond that, Jim explained. Beyond the ordinary member of the tribe. I don't know, Blair said thoughtfully. He was quiet for a minute, and then he asked, Do you feel like you do? Trust Sandberg to come up with the key question. He ignored it, thinking that a little distraction was in order, and began to rub the palm of his hand to get Sandberg's broad back. Blair gave a little grunt and nuzzled his face against Jim's shirt front. Score two for me, Jim thought triumphantly. He kept caressing Sandberg's back and waited until he felt Blair's hand tentatively slide onto his hip before asking his next question. You know the whole temple thing, Jim asked. The whole spirit animal thing, the whole mystical aspect of this. Yeah, Blair answered warily. What about it? Jim set his mouth for a moment, trying to think how to phrase it. Well, we trust it, don't we? I mean, it seems like a force for good, doesn't it? Blair pulled his hand off Jim's hip, tilted his head up to see his face. Yeah, it does. So far as I know, anyway. Jim nodded thoughtfully. But did you ever think that... Well, almost everything has two sides, doesn't it? I mean, there's usually a dark side to everything. You ever think that maybe there's another side to the mysticism? I mean, good isn't good unless it's defined against something else, right? Something not so good? Jim stared into space over his partner's curly head. I mean, I can't believe I'm overarmed here, Jim said, frowning. I've been in a lot of battles, and they just don't work that way. If they give you weapons, they expect you to use them. Maybe this sentinel thing. Maybe I'm supposed to be fighting some equal but opposite enemy, not just street thugs. He looked down at Blair and found his partner staring at him, open-mouthed. Well, Jim asked. I think you're getting paranoid, Blair said frankly. Jim sighed. Well, that's just great. He woke up alone on Blair Sandberg's rumpled bed. It took him a second to remember where he was and what had happened. But his clothes were still on, and no bodily fluids had been spilled, exchanged, or otherwise summoned forth, so he figured that things were okay. He was still a few giant steps away from the point of no return. Well played, he thought to himself. Slow and steady wins the race. He ran an idle hand over his head and heard a clatter from the kitchen. Blair had probably gotten up to make dinner. Dinner? In the kitchen. There were knives in the kitchen. Knives and fire, water and electricity in close proximity. Hell, the place was a death trap. And the thought propelled him out of bed and through the door. Blair looked up at him as he emerged. He was chopping up tomatoes with a large knife. Hey, he offered in greeting. I thought I'd make some of that pasta you like. The stuff with the feta and the pine nuts. Ow, damn it, he cursed as the knife slipped, and he quickly slipped his cut finger into his mouth. Jim nearly jumped out of his skin. Jesus Christ, Sandberg, can't you do anything without spilling blood? A few giant steps forward, and he was beside Blair, and Blair looked wildly startled as Jim yanked his finger out of his mouth and examined it closely. The cut was small but deep, and blood oozed up to the surface as he watched. And he couldn't help himself. He just couldn't stop himself. He pulled Blair's hands to his lips and slid the cut finger into his own mouth. The look on Sandberg's face was utterly priceless. He felt the warm, salty taste of Blair's blood on his tongue and sucked gently to stop the bleeding. So much for not exchanging bodily fluids. "Dear man," Blair said softly, eyes wide. "I want to help you. I'm trying to work with you here. Really, I am. But..." He stopped suddenly and shook his head. "This is really weird, you know?" Jim nodded. He knew. He also knew the precise moment that Blair's cut stopped bleeding. He pulled Blair's finger out of his mouth and tugged on his arm, leading him to the bathroom. Blair stumbled along behind him, still in something of a daze. "I mean, look," Blair said urgently, as Jim shoved his finger under the cold water tap. "I want you to have what you need. I want to give you... Don't you see, I'm trying to offer you..." "Ow!" he yelled, jolted back into the moment by the sudden sting of hydrogen peroxide. "That hurts." "It's deep," Jim said, focusing his attention on the band-aid. "You don't want it to get infected." "I don't know why you're suddenly fixated on stuff like this," said Blair, frowning at him. "I mean, hell, I've had worse." And Jim gritted his teeth and ignored that. Ignored the sudden dancing technicolor visions of worse things happening to Blair Sandberg. He finished with Blair's finger and dropped it. "Well, maybe I do know," Blair was murmuring. "Maybe I do know at that." Jim leaned against the wall and tried to look casual, like he hadn't just bandaged a small cut on the finger of a 30-year-old man. "Oh?" Blair nodded. "I think you're conflating a protective impulse with a sexual impulse, and so your subconscious is sending you on a roller coaster of paranoid anxiety in order to justify your desire to pull me closer, despite deeply ingrained social and cultural prohibitions, not to mention major sexual inhibitions." "In English?" Jim asked tightly, playing for time. "You're fucking repressed, man," Blair said and grinned. "So you think I'm a closet case?" Jim challenged, stepping forward to loom over him, hoping to intimidate him with his size. "I know you're a closet case," Blair replied confidently. "You wish," Jim blurted, feeling like a fifth grader. Blair seemed to take the jibe seriously. "Yeah, I thought of that. I mean, I wondered for a while if this was just some major delusional wish fulfillment fantasy on my part. I had to, like, seriously examine my own head, you know? But Jesus, Jim," Blair added, face suddenly transfixed with amusement. "If you're going to be sucking on my fingers every time I get a paper cut, well, a man's got to draw some conclusions." "What if I said you were wrong?" demanded Jim. "Further evidence of the depth of the repression," explained Blair. Jim glowered at him. "What if I punched you in the nose?" Blair laughed. "What, so we could go through some whole gentle press the ice pack to my face comfort routine?" He shook his head and took a step forward, toward Jim. "Can't we just go to it without the broken nose?" Jim felt the blood draining from his face and saw guilt flash across Blair's in response. "Jim, I'm sorry," Blair said quickly. He stepped closer still and laid a soothing palm against Jim's side. Jim flinched. "I don't mean to be blithe about this. I know that this is hard. I know that this is a big deal. This is a very big deal here." "No means yes. Yes means yes. Is that it?" Jim countered, and Blair looked suddenly horrified. "No. No, no, no. No means no," Blair said intensely. No always means no. I never meant, Jim, I'm sorry. Blair looked pained, and he started to skitter backwards, out of the bathroom. I'm so, so sorry, man. He quickly grabbed Blair's wrists. Wait. Wait just a second, okay? Blair turned anxious eyes on him and waited. It's this whole thing. It's too much. It's all happening too fast, Jim stuttered. It's all too much to deal with. I can help. Let me help, Blair whispered. Jim swallowed hard. How can you help? And he knew the answer, even before Blair tilted his head up and kissed him. He'd known somehow. He'd known that this was where they were going, where they'd been going all along, despite everything. Because playing against Blair was a sucker's game. Because Blair had all the moves. And Blair's mouth tasted incredibly sweet. His mouth was wet and sweet like the fruit he remembered from his childhood. Fruit that you ate in the summer that was so much better than anything you could buy nowadays. He pushed Blair against the wall and leaned against him, pressing their bodies together. He felt Blair's strong hands sliding around his waist, fumbling under his sweater, stroking the smooth skin at the small of his back. He felt Blair's mouth open under his and slid his tongue into that wet sweetness, kissing, tasting, loving the taste. Blair moaned and bucked beneath him. And now Jim, finally, let his conscious mind acknowledge his erection. Acknowledge that he was hard for Blair, but Blair was hard for him. And an aroused Blair was a wonderful thing. An aroused Blair was Blair, but only more so. More vibrant, more alive. Heart pounding and blood pumping, and muscles flexing and warm. Warm. So warm. Holding an aroused Blair was like holding a fiery summer storm in the palm of your hand. Lightning flashes and drumming thunder and the pounding, hissing sound of warm, wet rain. All the forces of nature bound within the circle of your arms. And he couldn't help himself. He held Blair's head between his hands, sucked at Blair's mouth, began to hump Blair uncontrollably, blindly seeking pleasure. Mouth, hands, muscles, tendons, cock. Blair was a link to life, a gateway to all that was alive and warm and good. Blair was a doorway. Blair was the exit sign, glowing red in the darkness of his mind. He'd been foolish to deny it. Hell, he wanted this. He wanted it desperately. He wanted Blair. Want, want, want. The pounding rhythm in his head. The pounding rhythm of his hips as he furiously humped Blair against the wall. He heard the gentle gasp, and it sounded like pain. And he realized that Blair was coming. Coming. Blair was having an orgasm in his arms. He moved his mouth off of Blair's, and let his guide suck in desperate gulps of air. Blair was moaning softly, and his cock was still jerking in his pants, spurting semen warm and fertile like summer rain. Jim kissed his way across Blair's face, then buried his face in Blair's hair. He thrust hard against Blair and came himself, groaning loudly. He felt Blair clutch his torso tightly, holding him up. He felt wetness spreading across his groin, felt the strength of Blair's hands, felt Blair's hair soft against his face. It's okay, Blair was murmuring to him. It's okay. You're okay. Everything's okay. He sought out Blair's ear through the cloud of hair and kissed it softly. Better than okay, he whispered. He lifted his head and met Blair's eyes. Blair looked indescribably pleased. Really? Really. he answered sincerely. Blair leaned forward and kissed his cheek. So now what? Jim asked softly. Now what? Blair echoed. Now we shower and have dinner. What? We're just supposed to go and eat pasta now? Jim asked. Yeah, said Blair, smiling. He raised a tender hand to Jim's face. Life, sex, pasta. You, my friend, need to be regrounded in life's fundamentals. So he showered, ate pasta, and then spent a blissful evening on the couch with Blair in his arms. His blessed protector switch was off. The hum of danger had abruptly vanished. The knives in the kitchen were just knives again. He buried his face at the back of Blair's neck, felt the warm pulse of Blair's blood thrumming against his cheek. He was at the point of no return. He was happy. November. I'm going to go around the back, see if I can sneak in somehow, Jim said, pulling out his gun and checking it with a practiced eye. You stay in the truck, okay? These guys will be armed and unhappy to see me. I don't want you getting hurt. Call for backup and keep your head down. Gotcha. Blair's face was tense and alert. But you be careful too, okay? Jim grinned. I'll be careful. I'm always careful. Now go. Go. Blair nodded and ran back toward the truck. Jim hesitated only a moment before exploding into motion, running around the perimeter of the building, keeping close to the wall, trying to keep out of sight. Finally, he was pressed up against the wall, outside the iron door of the building's service entrance. He threw out his hearing, listened intently for a few moments, and decided it was safe to go in. He took the handle and pulled gently. The door was locked. He slid a pick out of his pocket and dropped to his knees before the lock. 20 seconds later, he was standing on the other side of the closed door. The corridor was dark, and he readjusted his eyesight. Quietly, he moved down the hallway, checking each door as he came to it, finding each of them locked. At the last door, he sighed and pulled out his pick again. It took only moments to flick back the bolt, and he stealthily slipped into what his hearing already told him was an empty room. He shut the door behind him and looked around. The lab was indeed empty. Through the darkness, he saw a row of gleaming white lab coats, the glint of a glass case full of equipment, safety goggles, beakers, test tubes, and the like. And then he frowned as he saw the huge white storage refrigerator. He crossed to it and opened it. Inside were racks and racks of test tubes, sloppily marked with crooked stickers bearing the names of chemical formulas. He pulled a slip of paper from his pocket and compared the list of banned materials with the tubes in front of him. Gotcha. He carefully slipped one of the test tubes into his jacket pocket and reshut the refrigerator door. Turning, he extended his hearing again. There was no sound of human life in the building, just the electrical hum of wires and the whir of machinery. Where the hell was everybody? And then he looked back toward the door and saw the red sign glowing in the darkened room. Exit. He couldn't help but smile. The sign made him think of his lover. His doorway to life and love and pleasure. His beacon, his guide. Too bad American exit signs weren't like the English ones, he reflected wryly. Over there, the doors were marked way out. And that was Sandberg in a nutshell. Way out. He grinned. And then his face went suddenly slack as 100 whirling puzzle pieces clicked into place. Blair Sandberg. Way out. Butterfly bandages, the heavy quiet, the thrum of violence, paranoia. A way out was also a way in. And then he was running back toward the truck, heart pounding, using every bit of his speed, every ounce of his reserves. "He's the gate," Jim thought wildly, bursting out of the building. "He's the gate. He's the door from me, the door to me. They go for him first. They have to take him out before they can get to me. They go for him first." He rounded the corner of the building, running flat out. He saw the six uniformed men around the truck and immediately grasped their purpose. It was clear to anyone with any military experience at all that they were in formation, that they were purposefully aligned, and that they were up to no damned good. Frantic thoughts spun through his brain. "He's my scout. He's my point guard. He's the first line of my defences." "Stupid, fucking stupid," Jim screamed at himself. 8 years as a ranger, 12 years studying military tactics. He should have known better. He'd been playing it wrong. All wrong. God help him, but he was finally getting it now. Blair Sandberg was the front line. Blair Sandberg was the front line, and he'd been futilely trying to keep Sandberg behind him. He'd been trying to get in front of the front line, which was impossible. It just meant that the action was perpetually happening behind his back. It just meant he was constantly looking the wrong way, caught with his pants down, having to make up lost ground. Like now. The security guards had the truck door open and their hands on Sandberg, and they were pulling him violently from the cab, and they had their nightsticks in their hands. And Sandberg was struggling, lashing out with his arms and legs. But he was outnumbered and outsized. Each of the guards had at least a foot in height and 50 pounds on him. And then, like a drowning man, Sandberg slowly disappeared within the circle of men. And his senses felt more acute than they had ever been. Or perhaps he could sense it only now that he was expecting it, now that he really believed in it. But there it was, a rush of air, the hum of violence loud and clear, a low thrumming growl, terrifying in its malevolence, a glimpse of power, crouched muscles, an arching blur as it sprang toward the largest of the guards, the almost imperceptible shudder of the guard's form as the spirit entered him, the new yellow flecks in the guard's eyes, the suddenly raised nightstick and the repeated whispered instruction, "Kill the guide." He wasn't nearly close enough to stop the first downward crashing arc of the nightstick, and the other guards immediately followed suit, raining blows down on the unseen figure in the centre of the circle. And Jim heard another growl before realising that it was coming from his own throat, and he sprang into the assembled group, utterly unthinking, driven by pure animal instinct and something near to bloodlust. He grabbed the collar of one guard and sent him flying backward, using more raw strength than his conscious mind would ever have permitted. And then Jim was in the circle, and he single-mindedly went for the head guard, ignoring the slam of nightsticks hitting his arms, his shoulders, his back. He had the man in his hands and slammed him up against the side of the truck. The guard looked at him and his eyes were glowing yellow. In recognition? In triumph? And Jim suddenly realized that he could beat the man in front of him. That he could kill the man in front of him. But he would accomplish nothing. The man was a vehicle only. The real enemy was timeless, formless, indefatigable. The yellow eyes brightened. The man's lips twisted up into a smile. "Kill the guide," he taunted. "Kill the guide. Kill the guide. Kill the guide." And Jim could feel fury contorting his own features, and he coiled his muscles to strike the grinning bastard's face. "I will, you know," the man suddenly hissed. "Someday I will. Someday you won't stop me. And then I'll be coming for you. I'll come for you, you bastard, and you'll be alone and powerless to stop me. And he felt like his head was exploding. And he smashed the man's head backward against the hard metal side of the truck and felt the whoosh of the thing as it jumped away and disappeared, leaving him holding a mass of crumpled flesh, holding an unconscious man with a crumpled expression. He let him fall to the ground and turned, seeing the slight blur of distortion in the air as the animal leapt away. And then he became conscious of another guard in front of him, wearing an Ames Industries patch on his uniform and wielding an upraised nightstick. From the sudden look of fear on the guard's face, he suddenly realised his own expression must be pretty terrifying. He took a step forward and the man swallowed and brought the nightstick flying down. Jim dodged the blow with a sideways step and aimed a well-placed kick into the man's kidney, swinging his knee into the man's solar plexus as he doubled over. He turned to confront another guard and watched as this man faltered, stepped back, and then turned and fled, followed by the other two still conscious guards. Jim ignored their hasty retreat and crouched beside Blair. Blair was unconscious, his face covered in blood and purple bruises. The guards, God damn them, had aimed for his head. He took a deep breath and reminded himself that head wounds were deceptive. They looked worse than they were. They bled more than they should. Despite everything, Blair's heart was beating hard and strong. He pulled off his jacket, balled it up, and gently slid it under his partner's head. He then took his shirt off and began carefully wiping the blood out of Blair's eyes, away from Blair's face. In the distance, he heard sirens. Blair had evidently called for backup before the guards sprang their ambush. He intently continued working on his partner, now trying to staunch the worst of the cuts on Blair's head using the shirt as a makeshift bandage. When he next looked up, he saw Simon Banks' concerned face. And he realised how he must look, sitting bare-chested on the ground next to his bleeding partner on a cold November day. Not that he gave a shit. Jim. He only vaguely noted Simon's voice. Jim, check out of the Martyrdom Motel already, will you? Jim stopped pacing and shot a glance at his captain, whose large form was uncomfortably seated in a ludicrously orange waiting room chair. You're getting on my nerves. Sorry, sir, Jim replied indistinctly. Jim, I mean it. Sit down already. I can't. I'm too edgy. Simon sighed wearily. Look, he's fine. I know. The doctor said he's fine. I know. He knew. He did know that. He'd been listening closely. They're going to clean him up, stitch him, and send him home, Simon said. Right, Jim nodded agreement. And it wasn't your fault. What happened? Jim shrugged. That wasn't so easy to agree with. Simon cleared his throat and spoke more forcefully. I said it wasn't your fault. What happened? Yeah, he said, just to shut Simon up. Simon sighed again, then tried another tack. Look, you're going to have more than enough chances to make it up to the kid. You're the one who's going to get stuck playing nursemaid. He shot Simon a look. I won't mind. Simon rolled his eyes. Damn martyr complex, he muttered. No, Jim corrected quietly. He crossed his arms and leaned against the cinder block wall of the waiting room. It's not that. You tell me what else it is, Simon replied, and tell me again when you've brought him breakfast in bed for 3 or 4 days. I won't mind, Jim repeated. He gritted his teeth and thought hard for a moment, then decided to go for it. Simon, I'm with him. What? Simon asked. I'm with him, with Sandberg. Simon shook his head.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm with him, Jim said exasperatedly. You know, with him? Simon mimed confusion and Jim sighed. I'm fucking him, Jim said distinctly, watching Simon's eyes boggle with sudden shock. Is that clear enough? I'm fucking him, okay? Do you mind?
Do I mind?
Simon yelled suddenly, jumping out of his chair.
Like it's fucking any of my business.
Simon stopped suddenly, shuddered, and seemed to be trying to push that thought away with an uncharacteristically nervous flutter of his hands.
Like I fucking want to know about that. Jesus Christ, Jim.
So you don't want to know?
You bet your ass I don't,
Simon said firmly, crossing his arms and glowering at him.
Fine, Jim said, throwing himself into an orange plastic chair.
I won't tell you then.
Believe me, I appreciate it,
Simon snorted.
Well, you're welcome.
Simon opened his mouth to say something else, but suddenly the waiting room door opened and a nurse walked in.
Detective Allison?
Jim was instantly out of his seat.
Yeah, me.
The nurse nodded acknowledgement. We're pretty much done with Mr. Sandberg, except that he probably needs to sleep for an hour or two. We ended up having to give him quite a few painkillers. He's still a bit groggy.
Whatever he needs, Jim answered quickly.
I can wait.
Can I see him, though? Just for a minute?
Despite everything, Jim knew he'd feel better once he'd seen him. The nurse smiled at him and nodded.
Sure. We'd better go now, though. He was well on his way to sleep when I left him.
Jim and Simon exchanged brief but loaded glances, and then Jim followed the white-clad nurse out of the room and down the hall. The nurse nodded in the direction of Blair's room, and Jim thanked her and gently pushed the door open.
Sandberg. Jesus, Sandberg.
He approached the bed slowly, telling himself for the thousandth time that it wasn't as bad as it looked. Vitals were nice and strong. Just some bruising. Just some bandages. He put his hand out and laid it gently on his partner's arm. Blair opened unfocused eyes. He smiled dopily.
Hey, Jim, he slurred.
Hey, Jim answered quietly.
I'm okay. I'm just tired.
Blair sounded dazed.
Can I just rest a little bit?
Sure, Jim said warmly. Sure you can. You can rest however long you want.
Okay, thanks.
Blair's eyes drifted closed. It looked like it had been an effort to keep them open. Still, it wasn't as bad as it looked. Not nearly as bad. And painkilling drugs will do that to you every time, right?
Right, definitely.
He stood there helplessly for a moment, watching Blair sleep, watching the thin, almost transparent skin of his eyelids flutter as Blair's eyes moved nervously in his sleep. He squeezed his partner's forearm gently and whispered,
Blair, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry you're hurt. I'm sorry I didn't figure it out sooner. He sighed. I'm sorry I'm not as smart as you. He gave Blair's forearm another tiny squeeze and then turned and went back to the waiting room to wait.
Jim, I can get it. You should be lying down, Jim protested.
I don't want to lie down, Blair replied irritably. I've been lying down for days.
Honest, I feel better. I can make my own tea.
He grabbed the kettle from Jim's hand and slammed it down onto the stove with a bang. Jim took a step backward, watching as Blair closed his eyes and exhaled a long breath.
Jim, I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
No, it's okay, Jim said quickly.
It's not okay. Rudeness just isn't okay, okay? Blair leaned against the kitchen island and sighed. I just hate being an invalid. Which is pretty unfortunate, really, since I get hurt all the goddamn time. Blair smiled ruefully at him, but Jim couldn't find any humour in the remark. It makes me feel like such a fuck-up, Blair confessed sadly, and Jim's mouth fell open. No, Jim said vehemently, stepping forward and taking Blair's biceps in his hands. It's not your fault. Blair made a face. Maybe, but I've got to be doing something wrong. No, Jim said again, shaking him a little. You're not doing anything wrong. You're my guide. He wasn't quite sure why he'd said that. Blair's battered face creased with sudden worry. Yeah, Jim, he murmured soothingly. I'm your guide. Jim gritted his teeth and squeezed his eyes shut. You don't understand, he said slowly. You don't get hurt because you do anything wrong. You get hurt because you're my guide. And a guide is... A guide leads. A guide leads from up ahead. Don't you see? God, it was so fucking hard to explain. The guide leads. The guide's out there, up front, wherever he is. And the position makes you vulnerable. He opened his eyes. Blair's face was the very picture of confusion. Jim felt frustration boiling up within him. They're trying to kill you, Jim exploded finally. They try to kill you whatever you did. So you're not doing anything wrong, get it? It would happen anyway. Jim, who's they? Blair asked warily. They, him, it, the hyena, Jim added abruptly. Hyena? Blair asked incredulously. Hyena. Oh, fuck it, I'll explain later. He yanked on Blair's shoulders, pulled him close, and kissed him passionately. In the 6 weeks since they'd become lovers, Blair had put considerable effort into helping him lose his sexual inhibitions. For his part, Jim had managed to overcome Blair's surprising sense of personal modesty, gently coaxing him out of layers upon layers of shirts, t-shirts, and undershirts, with a series of whispered endearments. He'd also discovered that Blair's taste in endearments ran from the sweetly romantic to the raunchily pornographic, and was pleased to discover that the skillful juxtaposition of the two idioms, come here, Blair, darling, I want to come in your face, produced wondrous effects on his guide. So he broke off the kiss and whispered into Blair's ear, I want you. I love you. I want to fuck you. Come upstairs with me. And he could feel Blair's sudden shudder of desire, all thoughts of killer spirit hyenas presumably forgotten. Time enough for that later. They had the whole of their lives left to deal with that. He gently coaxed Blair up to the bedroom, gently divested him of robe, t-shirt, and boxers. He was careful of Blair's stitches, of the bandages, of the fading bruises on his face. He felt passion and lust and love. He felt like fucking Blair hard and fast, pounding into him to prove that they were both alive, but he couldn't. Blair was still hurting, and a little tenderness was warranted. And so he took it slow, kissing the bruised face gently, caressing the sore ribs gently, vowing it would be the last time, the very last time, that his guide would be hurt like this. The thought echoed over and over in his mind as he kissed Blair, as he slid gentle fingers into Blair to open him, as he turned Blair around and spooned up behind him. The last time, he thought, carefully sliding his erection into Blair's body, feeling Blair slowly open up to let him in. Inch by inch. The last time he would make love to an injured partner. The last time, injury would dictate the terms of their lovemaking. Blair exhaled a soft, breathy sound of pleasure, and Jim smiled and vowed that from now on, Sandberg's moans would all be from pleasure. He tightened his arms around Blair's broad chest and thrust in gently, loving the way Blair's head fell back against his shoulder, loving the way his guide was slowly losing control, and giving that control, that trust, to him. Blair's hands were twitching, making fists of empty air, grasping at nothing, grasping blindly for him. He reached out and grabbed Blair's hand, and Blair sighed contentedly at the contact. The sigh turned to a groan as Jim moved their hands to Blair's cock. And then Blair was breathing hard. He was breathing hard, they were breathing hard together. Jim thrust into the welcoming warmth of Blair's body, forcing Blair forward into his own hand. He closed his eyes and gave himself over to the pleasure of it. Now that Blair was teetering on the edge of orgasm, he felt it was permissible to seek his own. God, it was good. So good to be this close. So good to be buried in Blair's body like this. He had desired this closeness forever, but hadn't been able to consciously articulate what he wanted. Only now that he had it, did he realize that it was exactly what he'd always been missing. He groaned and pushed hard into Blair. Blair cried out, and Jim knew that he'd hit his lover's prostate. He thrust two more times in quick succession, and Blair wailed and spurted cum over their hands. The feel of it, the smell of it, made him lose what was left of his own control. He tightened his arms around Blair and fucked him helplessly, fucked the warm, pliant body until he was sobbing aloud with the sheer joy of it. He seized and came, gasping, and buried his face in Blair's neck. "I love you," he whispered, feeling that he had never before understood the meaning of the word satisfaction. This was satisfaction. God, I love you. He felt Blair's warm hands move to cover his own. I know, he heard Blair murmur. I know. I love you too. He nodded and closed his eyes, drifting off to sleep on a pillow of soft hair. He dozed for a while and then eventually woke to the sound of his own name on his lover's lips. Jim? Jim? He opened his eyes and saw Blair's face. Blair smiled warmly at him. Hey. Hey, Jim returned, grinning back. Blair leaned forward and kissed him once, softly. Then he pulled back and regarded him thoughtfully. So, Blair began, raising an eyebrow, tell me about this hyena. December. God, I'm freezing. I'm totally freezing, said Blair, rubbing his arms. He was shivering uncontrollably, despite the heat in the truck, despite his wool coat. Well, get your gloves, get your hat, throw your scarf on, Jim said, wrapping his own scarf around his neck. You're sure I can't stay in the truck? Blair asked nervously. I mean, this guy Polchek, he's a nut, right? I thought you wanted to be in on the action. Blair made a face at him. I thought I wanted that too, but now I'm not so sure. Well, I'm sure, Jim said firmly. I'm totally, completely, and utterly sure. Believe me. Blair sighed and nodded, then got out of the truck, groaning loudly as he was hit with a blast of icy wind. Jim slammed his door shut and gestured toward his partner. Come on. He started across the street and then stopped, realizing that Blair was still several paces behind. Come on already. I'm coming, Blair said defensively. Jim sighed and waited for Blair to catch up. Then took his partner by the wrist and pulled him across the street toward the Hotel Niagara. The Hotel Niagara was a dilapidated welfare hotel The glass in the front door was badly cracked, and the door creaked on its hinges as Jim opened it.
God, it's still freezing in here, Blair muttered.
Jim pulled his gun and looked around the empty lobby.
Okay, what now? Blair asked.
You're the guide. You tell me, Jim said, gesturing down a long corridor and pushing Blair ahead of him. Blair took a small step forward and then shot an anxious glance over his shoulder.
You're sure about this? I mean...
He stopped, swallowed hard.
I mean, you're sure you don't want to go first? Lead the way? Blaze the trail?
No. He touched Blair's shoulder reassuringly. You go first. I'll be right behind you. I'm right behind you, Chief. Honest.
Blair nodded and took a deep breath. Okay, okay.
He took a tentative few steps, then glanced back over his shoulder again. Jim splayed one open palm against Blair's back. This seemed to reassure his partner, who started walking forward with a bit more confidence. The first floor room started with a number 10. They passed 11, 12, 14. And then Blair suddenly took a couple of quick steps forward, pulling away, and stopped short outside room number 18. Blair turned and regarded Jim with wide-eyed surprise. Jim looked at his partner questioningly, but Blair just looked away, his face going strangely blank.
What?
Jim whispered finally, and Blair blinked and focused on him. Blair's expression changed to one of disbelief, even as he raised a finger to point at the door.
In here?
Blair whispered incredulously, and then the world was suddenly humming with sound, thrumming with violence, vibrating with the sound of anger and outrage. And Jim heard the small click and leaped forward, shoving Blair away from the door just as it exploded, the ancient wood splintering outwards as a shotgun went off. He wheeled instantly and grabbed the top of the shotgun, struggled to pull it away from the burly man in the knit cap, the burly man with the angry yellow eyes. They struggled intently for long moments, and then the fire seemed to go out of the man's eyes, and the strength seemed to leave his arms. And Jim pulled the shotgun from his fingers and smashed it against the side of his head, just as he felt the whoosh of air brush past him and glimpsed the animal bounding down the hallway toward the exit. He turned, still brandishing the long gun as a club, ready to take on any other attackers. But there weren't any. There was just Blair, who had shrunk back against the far wall and was staring at him anxiously. Jim took a step toward him. You okay? Blair frowned at the question and suddenly glanced down at himself.
Yeah, he said, sounding surprised.
He raised his head and met Jim's eyes, and a huge grin suddenly brightened his features.
Yeah,
he said happily, stepping away from the wall. Jim grinned back at him. He felt like jumping into the air, felt like screaming his triumph to the sky.
Well, okay.
Okay, come on, he added, slinging an affectionate arm around Blair's neck. Let's book this asshole.
That was the end of Paranoia by Francesca.